consider the question of computing the formulae for the sums of the powers of the integers. In the course of introducing this, he quotes a number of names. I don't really want to be on the screen because you can see them up there. He quotes a number of names, including Karl Harber from Ulm, as well as Wallace and Mercator and Hestet and others. Now that turns out to be of some historical interest, as we shall see as I proceed. So he then sets to compute the formulae for the sums of the powers of the integers in a very obvious notation. He's actually using the integral sign as opposed to a sum, a sigma for summation. And of course, he's using a sort of proportional sign where he means equal. And he's using asterisks to indicate that there are terms in the polynomials missing. So those are the formulae that he has produced to tell us about the sums of the powers of the integers. And those of you who are familiar with this bit of mathematics will recognize that the Bernoulli numbers actually head the columns. So these are, or were until research was done, thought to be the original appearances of the Bernoulli numbers. Now there are two strange things about that. The first is that it's not actually true, because the Bernoulli numbers appear in the work of Johannes Faulhaber, whom I just mentioned, as I'll show you shortly. And the second thing is that anybody who was really familiar with the Bernoulli numbers would realize that Bernoulli's got one of them wrong. Any guesses? It's actually rather easy to see that he's got one of them wrong. Because if you put n equals 1, then all those coefficients should add up to 1. Well, it's a bit difficult to do that in your head, really. But the answer is that in the row from the sums of the ninth powers, at the very end of there, it should not be 1/12. It should be 3/20. But of course, it's not quite correct for me to say that would be obvious to some of you who knew the Bernoulli numbers off by heart. I make a mistake there, don't I? Because it's not actually the head of a column. In all the tables of the Bernoulli numbers that were published after Ars Condit Tambay, that error was reproduced. And so I noticed that error. And the reason that I did that, and the way that I did that, is in itself, I think, quite instructive. Because what Bernoulli tells us is that when we're going to work on this sort of thing, it's rather important. I'm reading in English from the Scholium now. He's telling us what Wallace did in his arithmetic infinitorum. When he's about to discuss the foundation of his method, Wallace has a method for finding the sums of the powers. Then he says, Wallace turns into his proposition 176 of the contemplation of triangular, pyramidal, and other figure of numbers. But it would have been more satisfactory, and perhaps more suitable to the nature of the material, if he had, in the opposite order, put first the treatment of figure of numbers of course being the numbers of Pascal's triangle looked at from a different point of view of from the one of binomial coefficients, and secured that with a general and careful demonstration, and only then proceeded to investigate the sums of the powers. Beyond the fact that the mode of demonstrating it by induction is not sufficiently scientific, and in addition requires for any given series separate work, certainly everyone agrees that things that are simpler and prior to others in nature, as figure of numbers appear in comparison to powers, ought to proceed. Now this is a very interesting instruction as to how to work out an explanation of the formulae which Bernoulli has arrived at, because he doesn't tell us. And reading Ars Conjectandi in the right order and not taking little bits out of it turns out to be the secret of realizing how it is that Bernoulli has found these polynomials. Now that's exactly what I was doing. I was reading this book from the beginning, just as Bernoulli instructs us to. And to me it then became pretty obvious how Bernoulli had developed this table. Of course, he knows how to compute the successive sums of the powers by algebraic means, as have Wallace done and Ferrer have done before him. But he simply says, well, it's pretty obvious to anybody how these coefficients are developed, how to continue them. And so it was to me. But apparently it wasn't obvious to anybody else for 200 or 300 years. And it just shows how important it is to do what Fisher says, and that is read a book all the way through, because it is actually one continuous argument. And that goes for Ars Conjectandi exactly as it goes for The Origin of Species. So let me elaborate a little bit. I mean, obviously these sums of the powers formulae are of considerable interest to me, have been of considerable interest to me. Let me elaborate a little bit as to what's going on by taking pages from Pascal's arithmetical triangle. So I'm almost going to read to you what I wrote there. It is obvious that the first column of the coefficients is pretty straightforward. It is obvious that the second column of the coefficients is pretty straightforward. They're all a half. When you come to the next column, well, if you've been thinking about binomial coefficients, figure of numbers, in reading what Bernoulli has been writing for the previous couple of chapters, your head is full of the stuff that was in Bernoulli's head when he was thinking about the sums of the powers of the integers. And the reason that he's put this where he has it, Ars Conjectandi, is because it's a natural sequel to that work that he'd been doing. And so it is for a reader. You can see, if you take the third column of coefficients and you put them over a common denominator, they come out as 2, 3, 4, the numerator comes out as 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it's not surprising what the next number is. And when you do the same thing, the fourth column, you turn over the page, now I've done the calculation, and you find you get those binomial coefficients, you get the next row of figure of numbers. And so it goes on. And it's only when you get down to the one which tells us what the ninth powers are, that you notice that you don't seem to have the right result. And then, of course, you realise, when you do the addition, that Bernoulli's got a mistake there, and everybody else has reproduced it ever since. Well, I think that's a fair statement until such time as people like Glacier in Cambridge and so forth really started seriously computing not only Bernoulli numbers, but all the other coefficients. And then you get some correct tables. But nobody had previously seen that there was an error actually in Bernoulli's own table. One of the things that one can do in Cambridge, you can come across a name like Faulhaber, and you don't read any German. You want to know about the history of mathematics, is you don't go look up Faulhaber in some great 19th century German tome of the history of mathematics. You go along to the university library and look up Fowl Harbour in the catalogue to see if the university library has any Fowl Harbour. So I went along to the university library and dived in, as the old catalogue is, looked up Fowl Harbour and found a book called Academia Algebrae. So I had brought down and started sort of fingering, 1630, and then I realised that some of the numbers were actually numbers. Well, like the first Louis numbers were alleged to be the first time in Ars Contemplandum around 1713. They would be a bit earlier in Bernoulli's own writing, of course, because 1713 was what, 5 years after Bernoulli's death. But here we are in 1630 with the Bernoulli numbers up to about the 18th or something like that in the work of Fowl Harbour, staring in the face of the rare books from the university library. So of course I started making inquiries as to how common this particular book was, and it turns out that only two copies of it are known. One of it is in Germany, the other is in the university library. It used to be owned by Carl Jacobi. Nobody knows how we got it. That's quite interesting from a historical point of view if you do a deep dive into these things, because Jacobi also wrote about the sums of the powers. There's work to be done there by historians to find out just how similar what he did is to what is the book that he owned. Or whether, as often happens, one acquires an interesting book after one's done a piece of work, because one comes across it later and one recognises very readily, because one's done the work oneself, what's in the book. Now it's it's too much of a distraction for me to get excited about Fowl Harbour. I'm thinking too much about Fowl Harbour. But I do have
that must be Jacobi's own seal on that page. Yeah, it's more prominent than the seal in Cambridge University Library.
What?
It is more prominent than the University Library seal.
Oh, yes. Well, there will be other ones from the University Library around, scattered around the rest of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when I found out about this, I wrote a piece called Sums of the Powers of the Integers and pointed out the error, published it in the Mathematical Gazette. And described the work that Fowl Harbour had done, which was very much a question of dealing with polynomials in that form. And only when we have polynomials in that form did he multiply them out to get them into the basic form that you see in Bernoulli's polynomials. Now what's interesting about the construction of these polynomials is that Pascal produced a method of finding these polynomials in the sums of the powers by a different method from both Fermat and Bernoulli. And it's a way which can very easily be represented by multiplying of what Pascal has done. Oscar's method of finding the sums of the flowers is one which can't explain to the textbooks, to this day, it's not even the standard method. But what I noticed is that it's very easy to form Oscar's method by using simple matrices. If you end up with matrices which have binomial coefficients as their entries in certain forms, then you get all these coefficients simply by inverting a Pascalian type matrix. And once again, you can find that also in my Pascal's Elemental Triangle book. But that all came about from the need of seeing the name Karl Harper in our project number, and then simply going to the library and finding the book. So I recommend that as a good method of doing the history of science. So that's quite a major distraction from the main theme of Karl's Country Tambourine. So what happens next? Well, what happens next is that part three contains an enormous number of examples, which I suspect the only person who's ever worked through, or the only people who ever worked through, have been the translators. So I imagine that Edith Silla herself has been rather carefully through all the examples. I wrote a review of Edith Silla's work it came out a few years ago. And I thought it would be fun to take one of the examples and work through it myself to see if Bernoulli was right. So I did just that. I chose problem 17 and I worked my way through it. Well, I disagreed with Bernoulli's result. So I thought, well, I'll go and check all my work. So I checked all my work. The arithmetic seemed to be fine. Quite complicated. Problem he had set, but anyway, I convinced myself that I hadn't made a mistake. So there were then two solutions to this. One was mine and one was Bernoulli's. Quite a few years later, at the bicentennial, 250 years celebration of, where are we now? The celebration of the publication of Ars Contra Tambourine. I was asked to write a piece for the Royal Statistical Society's publication significance, which I did, and I admitted that I had worked through this particular example and found that my solution was different from Bernoulli's, and invited readers to decide which of us was correct. And before very long, I began to get emails. And the vote was definitely in favour of Bernoulli. It turned out that without going through it, it's a bit difficult to describe what I had done. But basically, it was necessary to consider all the possibilities in two columns, all the possible things that might happen. But you had to count the one that was at the very bottom between the two. You had to count it twice. I'd only counted it once, you see. So I just missed a little bit. So I nearly got full marks. But anyway, I think it's as far as a duel between Bernoulli and me is concerned, it's one all, because after all, I found that he had a mistake and he's found that I have a mistake. So I think I can keep quiet from now on. The next thing we want to look at is part four, but I'm really going to say very little about part four, because part four, which I suppose would be helpful if I described what the title is in translation, in part four, Bernoulli changes tack completely. We then have the Arthur conjecture. He's done all the mathematics that he wanted to do, and now he's going to have the art of conjecturing teaching the use and application of the preceding doctrine in in civil, moral, and economic matters. And this is the part that he felt was the most important, and it's the part that we all now think is the most important, because Pierre is going to be introducing ways in which to use the calculus of probability in these civil, moral, and economic matters. And in the course of doing this, he establishes his near theorem, which, in a way, is the foundation of statistics, because in his near theorem, he is telling us that if we go on for long enough, then proportions will, as we keep sampling, eventually converge to the expected number in the binomial distribution. Well, I'm not going to try and go through that now. It's extremely well known, I'm no authority on it, but it is absolutely the linchpin of part four. And in Bernoulli's own view, the most important thing in the whole book, it is the theorem which he leads up to, it's the basis of the work that he's really interested in, and that is the application of all these theorems which come in the permutations and combinations and sums of the powers of the integers, binomial distribution, Heumann's work on expectation. It's all leading up to the application of these new probabilistic methods to civil, economic, and what's he called it, moral problems. As far as the originality of Ars Conjectandi is concerned, it is the fourth part which is so original, both in the theorem itself and in the notion that you can apply this new calculus to such a wide, to the social sciences. The first three parts, they were quite advanced when they were written, but not when they were published, because by the time they were published, others like Nordborg and De Moivre and so forth had been publishing more advanced material. So there's nothing very much in the first three parts which is particularly original at the time that it was published. But the very first part, as I have described it, is a valuable account of interpreting Heumann's own book, which is 1607. It is striking that Bernoulli did not know about Pascal's book. There's no evidence whatsoever, in fact there's a lot of evidence that Bernoulli did not know about Pascal's Traité du Préambule de l'Arithmétique, which contains so much of the material which is in the first three parts of Ars Conjectandi, though we know that just before he died, he learned of its existence. I think it was from Leibniz. And that must have come as a bit of a surprise to him. In particular, I think a lot of the proofs of the contents of a lot of the proofs of the statements in Pascal's book, where he's going through all the properties of the binomial coefficients, are much better in Pascal's book than they are in Ars Conjectandi. Ars Conjectandi's mathematics is a bit more, it's just a slightly more muddled. I mean, there's good mathematics and there's bad mathematics, and they lead to the right answers, but they're both correct mathematics. But in the case of developing the results which are in Pascal's arithmetical triangle, Pascal's mathematics is much clearer and more persuasive than Bernoulli's. So we're left with a book of great fame, of huge influence, but of modest originality, except for the fourth part. And for that reason, of course, statisticians and others working in the social sciences, applied mathematics to social sciences, hold the book in high regard. As statisticians, we should remember that it does contain the Bernoulli binomial distribution. So when we talk about Bernoulli trials, we must remember this is Gerhold or James or Jack Bernoulli, and not one of many other Bernoullis. The first occurrence of binomial distribution. And then, for those of us who get sidetracked by topics like the sums of the powers of integers, it's very interesting to go down that route by time and to take a look at those problems and the history of that. But even then, what we discover is that what De Neumann called the Bernoulli numbers are not really Bernoulli numbers at all, because they've been around for the previous 70 or 80 years in the work of Karl Haber. I mentioned that Bernoulli is Karl Haber's name, but that doesn't mean to say that he looked at the particular book which contains the Bernoulli numbers. There's no evidence of that at all. So he might have just been speaking quite generally about Karl Haber and Wallace and the others. I'd be looking at some of these things. So I wouldn't for a moment suggest that he got his formulae out of Karl Haber's academia and elsewhere. But there's no doubt that there they are, and you can go on to the university library and see them for yourself. I think I should stop there.
It's open for everyone now to chip in the thoughts and questions.
Very much so.
I was saying it is open to everybody now to chip in with thoughts, questions, etc.
You weren't addressing me. No, that's fine. But you have to shout at me a little bit.
Can I ask what terminology Bernoulli uses for these entities in his calculation? Probabilities, chances, expectations, all these terms were sort of going to churn around a lot more during the 18th century.
These are expectations he's talking about. Everything is done in terms of expectations. It's very well discussed by Ida Silla, actually, because Bernoulli himself is not consistent. There are problems with words like exponentially as to exactly what he's talking about, which he's of course had to go into this very carefully. But Huygens and Pascal and Bernoulli, they're all thinking in terms of expectations. And it's put until a little bit later, I suppose it's when we get to more that they start thinking in terms of probabilities.
Another comment to make is that I wasn't aware of this. I had been looking at Laplace's essay on the title, but there's an analytic essay and a sort of essay for lay readers. Yes, and I mean, notable amongst that is Laplace's driving forward to apply this machinery of distributions and calculations to exactly the moral, economic, and social questions. And he was even expecting judges to be able to make decisions using this calculus.
Yes.
And would you have been aware of Bernoulli's work?
Well, I think Bernoulli's work came to everybody's attention much more so than, shall we say, Pascal's. Pascal, which is where my interest in this field started, Pascal was rather neglected by historians of science. I only wrote my book because I became interested in Pascal as a geneticist, because genetics is full of binomial coefficients. And so I thought one day, well, you know, there doesn't seem to be a book about Pascal's triangle. So I looked in many places and read many articles and found many mistakes. And I thought it's high time that somebody did something about this. So I drafted a little book. My children was much of anything. one Christmas vacation, in which I started with just plain mathematics of binomial coefficients and found you would have with them. And then a second part, which was to be the applications to things like genetics and statistics and so forth. Well, that seemed quite a nice idea. And then I began to see that when people wrote about the history of Pascal's book, they got things wrong there too. So I thought, well, I better go and look at Pascal's book. So off I went to the university library again. UL has two copies. And to my astonishment, I found that Pascal had written the book, which I thought I'd just written. If you look at Pascal's thinking, it sets out mathematics and binomial coefficients and so forth. When he's done that, he then gets on with the applications. So I thought, this is really a bit silly. He's been so neglected that people talk about Pascal's triangle, and they have no idea what Pascal's contribution was. So I started writing, and I got the hooked on it. Well, that's the start. And that's what I was saying, that led me into Berlin.
Thank you.
And then to follow. I've lost that rather happily, not objecting to evidence I want from it.
Is your discovery of Bar Harbor well known? Because before coming here, I looked up Bernoulli numbers on Wikipedia, and it didn't mention him. And I wondered who had written the Wikipedia article.
Bar Harbor, there is Bar Harbor in Wikipedia, isn't there?
Yes,
not by me, but by
the
Bernoulli. Not in Bernoulli numbers. No, instead of Japanese had written, had found them before.
Bar Harbor's only come to people's memories because of that little paper that I circulated. And that's because of Oscar de Camper.
Does Newton sort of have doodles affecting binomial coefficients? Does Newton have scribbles about binomial coefficients and counting problems? Or is there nothing in his Nachlass relating to this sort of material?
It's a question of, is there anything in Ars Cogitanda about counting problems?
No, does Newton, son of Cambridge, scribble anything which is vaguely related to this?
Essentially, well, besides the obvious work on the binomial itself,
well, that leads one to suspect he must have played with the numbers, and if anybody was going to spot things, he might have.
There's a whole business of Newton and then Wallace, and the interpolation that Wallace goes through find out what the series from Pi is all intimately connected with the binomial coefficients and so forth. Again, I'm afraid I have to refer you to this because I just wrote a whole chapter on that, but it was 1979 or something when I wrote it, so I can tap it on the tip of my tongue. But you'll find I go into it pretty carefully there. And especially I go into Wallace's work, following on from Newton. But I hope I get a decent account of Newton. Certainly, when I was writing this, it was a great privilege to be able to wander into the university library without a card, go up to rare books, up to manuscripts, and call for Newton's work on the binomial distribution. And the assistant just came along, dumped it in front of you, and you spread it out and looked at it and thought, that's the advantage of this. Well, I dare say it's all digitized now, so you don't get to look at the original, but this is part of the pleasure of this sort of work, of course, is going to a place like the UL and hunting around and seeing all this wonderful stuff. Well, I guess why shouldn't show you this now? You can see what's in it. I wish we leave G's copy open for inspection. Perhaps we should find the Songs of the Powers, since that's been much an interest of mine. Just at the end of the second part. I need a page number, really. Copies in the libraries of Cambridge. I haven't actually looked to see how many copies there are in college libraries, but most respectable colleges would have a copy of what's going to come
out. It even went through lots of editions, did it?
Were there many editions or was it just the one?
It was just the one.
But as I demonstrated, at least two different printings.
Yes.
In fact, well, I borrowed the university library copy on the special dispensation of the Satin Bible many years ago and compared very carefully the two copies. And in both the university library copy and our Keys library, there is my a copy of my notes looking at the differences. Which are very, very, very small. I was through Bob a couple of days ago actually, waved to James. And
I don't know if he's actually buried, Anthony. Is he actually buried there? Can you actually visit his grave?
I want to come a bit closer because
yes, yes.
I hear he's not.
Yeah. Can you actually visit his grave, Bernoulli? Can you visit his grave? Is it open to the public to visit his grave? You know, like Bayes, I was
thinking.
Well,
I mean, he's got a gravestone. It has the Bernoulli spiral on it.
Ah.
It doesn't have any Sons of the Powers.
Is it in Basel?
In Basel, yes.
Yeah.
Presumably along with all the other Bernoullis.